The following program is underwritten by the New Jersey Council for the Humanities. Welcome to Humanities Connection, production of WFDU-FM and the New Jersey Council for the Humanities. I'm Bob Mann. As usual, we have two very different but equally interesting segments on this episode of Humanities Connection. In just a few minutes, you'll hear my conversation with Julia Taylor. Julia is Director of Community Planning and Development for an organization in Trenton called IELS. We're going to be talking about an NJCH incubation grant for a new program called Touring Trenton. You may be surprised by the many historical and cultural points of interest that are located in the state capital. But first, a fascinating interview about a play called Life, Death, and Life Again. Radical forgiveness. It's a concept which is easy to understand, but very difficult, if not impossible, to demonstrate in real life. But radical forgiveness is one of the central themes of an acclaimed theater piece entitled Life, Death, and Life Again, Children Sentenced to Die in Prison. The New Jersey Council for the Humanities funded many important aspects of this theater production, and my guest on the program right now, he's on a phone, speaking to us for the next 14 minutes, Dan Swern, who is co-founder and producing director of Colab Arts. Dan, thanks for taking the time to talk with us.
Bob, thank you so much for having me.
Let's first of all talk about the title, Life, Death, and Life Again, Children Sentenced to Die in Prison. Are we talking about the death penalty for minors or the de facto reality that if you're sentenced for life, it really is a death sentence?
When we talk about children being sentenced to die in prison, we're talking about extreme sentencing. The United States is the only country in the world that sentences children to life imprisonment. And we're talking about young people who are typically considered juveniles in our court system and who are tried as adults and then sentenced to life without parole.
Let's talk about the format of the play. So I've read in some of the research that I did for this conversation that it is a verbatim play. What does that mean? What exactly is the format that you're using to tell some of these stories of these kids and also of the victims and their families?
Bob, that's right. It's a verbatim theater piece, meaning that the words you hear on stage are directly taken from interviews with individuals who have experienced these real experiences themselves, either as incarcerated individuals or as families of victims. Our playwright, Elizabeth Weil Greenberg, is an incredible individual, spent a number of years as a case analyst for the Innocence Project, and has been working as the communications director for the New Jersey Institute for Social Justice. Took it upon herself for about 3 or 4 years to engage in a series of interviews with individuals who were incarcerated for murder as juveniles and sentenced to life without parole. She created the piece because she had seen similar work done through her time at the Innocence Project for individuals' stories who had been wrongfully convicted and incarcerated. And what she wanted to do was highlight individuals who themselves were guilty and acknowledged those charges, but to show that those aren't stories that should be ignored, that the individuals whom we do incarcerate for violent crime, for other potential offense, have just as many rights experiences and have specific conditions that push them into those actions, particularly as juveniles. We are talking about young people who are brought up under very vulnerable conditions, and those are the kinds of stories we want to be able to highlight to show that an individual who commits a violent crime is not a bad person, and their story is just as valuable.
Just to play devil's advocate here, though, you heard my intro, and maybe I'm not playing devil's advocate as much as I'm even expressing some of my own feelings. I said that radical forgiveness is a concept easy to understand, but difficult, if not impossible, to demonstrate in your own real life. I have to honestly say, and I think I'm reflecting the feelings, Dan, of many people in our tri-state area and internet audience, that you really have to consider the feelings of the victim's family, the suffering of the victim. Is there any way in which our showing mercy and some sense of restorative justice to the offender that we're ignoring the pain of the victims and their families?
You're absolutely right in terms of needing to consider the feelings, the emotions, the pain of the families of victims and victims themselves when it applies. What we're pushing forward with this story and with this production is the idea that life sentencing without parole is systemically counter our general value statements around how we should be looking at our justice system. Do we want to create a punitive justice system where people are removed, put away, and we turn the light out on them? Or do we want to look at a restorative justice system where people who commit a crime, however terrible it might be in the moment, and look at the conditions that push them into those instances, and look at how we can potentially bring them back in a healing capacity to be productive, to be instrumental members of society, and on the other side, help create a healing component for the families of those families of the victims themselves as well. And where we talk about this being radical forgiveness, that's absolutely hard to accept potentially. And we're asking a very hard question of everyone involved in the justice system as well as the public. Can we potentially look at a way of conducting justice that is restorative?
Let's give an actual solid example. We've been talking in theory. Let's hope no one in the audience ever, you know, has a loved one taken away or is the victim of violence. But you have here a verbatim play. There have to be real stories. I don't want to have any spoilers here, but in which there is a story of someone who did actually find the strength to engage in this radical forgiveness. Can you share at least one of those from your play, from the theater piece, with the audience?
That's right. There's an interview with an individual named Bill, and he gives us his story. He was the grandson of a woman who had been murdered by a young girl and her friends. They came into her home under false pretenses. They were 14-year-old girls, and they attempted to rob her and stabbed her, I think, about 30 times. And they left her to die in her dining room. And Bill's story is very much what we've been talking about, that he came from a very angry, very pained place in terms of thinking about and narrating for the audience what his experience was like at trial. And then the moment he saw that this was a 14-year-old girl and realized that, oh my God, I understand her conditions. I understand that this is not something that that happens just because a person is bad, but because the world around them is not supportive of them. It's not nurturing. And also Bill turned to God and wanted to know whether or not God would support the idea of killing a young person, whether it be by the death penalty or just through long-term imprisonment. And he came to the conclusion for himself, and we share this in a story, that he ultimately wanted to make sure that the justice system at large started to think more restoratively for people like the young girl that killed his grandmother. That, yes, his grandmother was a victim. He was a victim, but he wanted to look beyond his pain and try and make sure that the next person doesn't experience the world and doesn't experience these terrible conditions in the same way that he did.
Let's talk a little bit about the role of our underwriter, the New Jersey Council for the Humanities. They were one of your funders. What was their role, and what have they actually been able to contribute? Because As we've mentioned so many times on this broadcast, there are plays, there are theater pieces, there are performances, and then there's the humanities aspect of it, where there's either a discussion or a learning opportunity or something instructional. So give us some background on the involvement of the council and some of these related projects that go along with the theater piece itself.
Absolutely. CoLab Arts generally really looks to see how art can be impactful and play a role generally in our community and in the lives of the people that live in the New Brunswick, Middlesex County area here in New Jersey. And so we look to continue conversations from stage to the home, from stage to the neighborhood. And the New Jersey Council for the Humanities became really instrumental for this piece in trying to connect the play, the interview work that Elizabeth was already doing, in connecting that to policy and conversation. And through the grant, we were able to engage the support of the Sentencing Project and probably one of the country's leading experts on life sentencing without parole for juveniles, Josh Rovner. And we put together a panel discussion that included leading experts in both radical forgiveness as well as sentencing policies for juveniles for the two performances that we were able to present in New Brunswick. And that's actually been a component we're now integrating into all of our performances. And the idea of that humanities integration has only grown, where our audiences are now not only community members for those for whom these stories reverberate and have value, but we're also now using the piece for continuing education. We're working with the Philadelphia Defenders Association for a new performance that's coming in September, on September 25th, to provide CLE credits. That's a continuing legal education credits for attorneys. And we're doing something similar on December 11th at Luna Stage in West Orange with the New Jersey State Bar Association. And then we have another performance on December 5th at Monmouth University. And the university is providing continuing education for social workers. So the work is not only emotional and impactful and serves as a great piece of storytelling, but we're finding ways that it can actually support development and real social improvement and development professionally and for our communities.
The dates that you gave, I appreciate that you gave them for our initial broadcast on WFDU-FM, September 25th, will already have come and gone. But those next two performances would be right in our listening area, and people can certainly get information about those performances, which are going to be happening in October and in December. So let's talk even beyond these upcoming performances. Actually, before we wrap it up with a final thought, let's be pragmatic here. How can people find out about getting tickets? Because these sell out very quickly, these performances. How can they get tickets or information about tickets for October 25th and the December event?
The best thing to do is to sign up for our mailing list. And what we're going to let our mailing list know immediately when tickets become available. We've been really excited about all of the energy and enthusiasm around these performances, and they typically sell out in a week and a half or so wherever we go. And we've also been really lucky to have an incredible coalition of nonprofits and donors that have been able to help us underwrite these performances and keep them free for the public, as well as really amplifying the word whenever we go to a new community.
And again, where specifically can they be looking? Where should they go?
Sure. Our website is www.colab-arts.org. And on Facebook, we're at CoLab Arts, CoLabArts. Those are really the two best places to find us online.
And just finally, because this program will be online long after those events happen, so I want to leave the audience with a take-home message. I know that if I went to see Life, Death, Life Again, Children Sentenced to Die in Prison, that I may have to be someone whose viewpoint was changed. Do you find audience members having this as a transformation, as something that actually gives them a different perspective on the issues involved, whether that be radical forgiveness or sentencing, restorative justice, any of these concepts. Do you find that your audience members actually experienced a change of thought?
Well, as far as what that change actually is, anecdotally, absolutely. People find me after the performance and they thank me. And the two things I usually hear about are, I am so glad to see arts being used in a social justice capacity in this way in my community, or I did not know any of this. How can I get involved? And we've been tracking all of these responses with surveys that we designed through support from New Jersey Council for the Humanities, and just trying to continue to grow our coalition of people that want to be involved. As far as changing minds or changing transformative experiences, absolutely. People are coming to our performance completely unaware of the stories of these individuals and understanding that we are all vulnerable, and that really it's the conditions in which we come up that really dictate our actions. In a lot of respects, and makes it much more clear that whoever we put in prison for these kinds of crimes, particularly as juveniles, they're not bad people. They are not individuals that are doing these violent actions because they want to. It's coming out of a place of desperation. It's coming out of a place of a conditional input that, as long as we can keep that in mind, I really do believe that our country can move towards a place of restorative justice.
Dan Swern, co-founder and producing director of CoLab Arts.